Okay, welcome back for episode 147. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, there's been some interesting developments with the coronavirus crisis, or the lockdown that's been imposed, supposedly to deal with this pandemic they declared. We've had some protests, some signs that they're looking to, what they say, reopen the economy, whatever that means. There's been some stirring of the natives. Our natives are restless in several states. Michigan, I heard Kentucky, even here in Virginia, there have been a few, although not as big as the ones in Michigan, where many of the residents showed up with guns, apparently, to protest their governor's imposition of a lockdown. It's got some, at least rhetorical support from the president of the United States. Donald Trump appeared to endorse the protest against the lockdowns. This is a report that I read. In a series of tweets, he said, "Liberate Minnesota, liberate Michigan, then liberate Virginia." These are all states with Democratic governors. Protesters say the severe economic restrictions are hurting citizens, but health officials warn lifting them could spread the infection. The U.S. saw its highest daily death toll on Thursday, recording 4,591 deaths in 24 hours. That spike could be because Johns Hopkins University, which records the data, began to include deaths with a COVID-19 probable cause. Well, we all know the problems with the infection rate numbers and the death rate, how they've been fudging the numbers, cooking the books, so to speak, with the death certificates, and also the fact that they count probable or presumed as infections. The test itself is inconclusive. It's very dubious because it's notorious for being false positive. In fact, the maker of the test says you should not use it for purposes of diagnosing, but they are. So you have that problem. The demonstrations calling on authorities to end the shutdown have occurred in Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Minnesota, Utah, Virginia, and Kentucky. More demonstrations are planned, including in Wisconsin, Oregon, Maryland, Idaho, and Texas. The protests have varied in size, ranging from a few dozen people in Virginia to thousands in Michigan, which was the most impressive, at least that I saw. A lot of these people weren't wearing masks anymore, nor were they social distancing. And the governor, Gretchen Whitmore, who's quite a piece of work, wagged her fingers at the protest and said because of social distancing, they might spread the disease and she might have to extend the lockdown. So she's threatening them. So things are happening. I mean, there's some ridiculous rules like in Michigan where people can't buy plant seed for their gardens. And they can't buy, like, home improvement products, but they can buy groceries. So she's, you know, putting those types of restrictions on people. Recently, Judge Napolitano appeared on Fox News, and he called these things impeachable offenses. He was particularly responding to Governor Murphy's appearance, New Jersey Governor Murphy's appearance on Tucker Carlson's nightly program, where Tucker Carlson pointedly asked the governor where he got the authority to suspend the Bill of Rights. And the governor responded, said, that's beyond my pay grade. Which, okay. And so Fox Legal News analyst Judge Napolitano suggested social distancing measures implemented by the Democratic governors in states such as Michigan and New Jersey violate the law and trample civil liberties. He said, this is a blatant violation of the Bill of Rights, a blatant violation of freedom of assembly, of your right to purchase a product that you decide is essential. Napolitano said Thursday of Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer's new executive order. These are not decisions for the government to make. They are decisions for individuals to make. And the sooner we take our freedoms back, the less likely the government will be able to continue doing this. Then he continued, if we don't take our freedoms back, they may not come back. So we have to take them back. Whatever that means. Thousands of people gathered outside the Capitol building in Lansing, Michigan on Wednesday for an event dubbed Operation Gridlock, which aimed to clog the city streets and protest Whitmer's recent executive order issued to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Whitmer last week extended social distancing guidelines in Michigan through the end of April, in addition to banning travel between residences and the sale of non-essential goods, including clothing, gardening seed, and car seats. What? If you're not buying food or medicine or other essential items, I guess what she deems essential, you should not be going to the store, Whitmer said. it really wasn't about the stay-at-home order at all. It was essentially a political rally, a political statement that flies in the face of all science. There's that, oh, science, wow, how do you challenge science? Of all the best practices in stay-at-home order that was issued, Whitmer said, this was a political rally that is going to endanger people's lives because this is precisely how COVID-19 spread, so she's threatening them. Like I said, these, Judge Napolitano said, when a governor violates, the federal and state constitution, which they are doing, these are felony, it's felony misconduct in office, an impeachable offense, and it's an impeachable offense if you knowingly or negligibly violate the constitution, people's civil rights. So these orders are all unlawful. It's a question whether or not people are not going to stand up and challenge them. Just simply stop abiding by them. And you might be coming to that point where there's just, civil disobedience. Go out and do it. Go back to work and see what happens. And interesting enough, I think as many as half a dozen sheriffs in Michigan have said they will not enforce this order. And sheriffs are constitutional officers. They swear an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution as well, as each governor does, despite, so apparently they don't take that oath too seriously. So that's the situation. We were brewing a brewing revolt throughout the country as these lockdowns continue. It is doing, irreparable harm to the U.S. economy, and people are starting to really feel the pain throughout the country. And so the governments, various governments, may have a good old fashioned revolt on their hands.
Well, let's hope so. In Michigan, they stood on the Capitol steps with ARs.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that, but and I noticed that they weren't wearing masks, which is a good, because you really don't want to combine a mask with an AR. It doesn't go well in terms of fashion. You had mentioned Napolitano's idea that if we don't take the rights back, we won't really have the rights. And I do agree with that. They are obviously walking back from some of the draconian lockdown stuff. I believe that Florida actually opened its beaches this evening.
Yes, the mayors are doing that, from what I understand.
Yeah, and so so I think that a lot of the lockdown could collapse just very quickly, because once one area basically ends the lockdown, the adjacent ones will, I think, immediately do the same. I mean, you can't really, enforce something that draconian, when it's in close geographical, proximity. And so the thing could just sweep right across and collapse. But I hope that before that happens, that protests appear everywhere and that they are very aggressive. The protest in Michigan was great because it was huge, and because it was basically the citizens were acting out aggressively. They blocked all of the streets. They parked their cars and they just created gridlock. But there was actually even a better protest, which occurred today in São Paulo in Brazil, which was really quite fiery. And people can see it on YouTube. In Brazil, the situation is very complicated because the president is basically saying, lockdown should be soft, but certain region governors are trying to do harder lockdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was the protest. It was against a particular governor.
He fired his health minister, right, over a disagreement on this issue, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, there was it was just a huge blow up, but the people took to the streets. And I was watching the YouTubes, and I'm telling you, this was citizenry at its finest. I mean, they were angry, articulate, and they basically just took control of the streets. And, they were just demanding the end of this particular governor's control over employment. And that was really what people were saying over and over again, is that I need to go back to work. I need to put food on the table and keep a roof over my head. And so I'm willing to take my chances with the virus. You're not offering me anything when you offer me sequestration because I don't have any food. I need to work in order to achieve this. So
they apparently have had huge protests in India because the situation is just more desperate there.
Yeah. And hopefully the we'll start to see more and more of real citizen aggressiveness, trying to basically in a way communicate, with the politicals that it just has to stop. We're taking the rights back. And there has to be some aggression on the part of the citizenry, not advocating violence, but you have to basically send a kind of message of intimidation, because
that's what they do.
They do it to us all the time, and if we don't respond, at least to some extent, then the right doesn't come back.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? If they can say, well, we're going to come into your house and take your children, and if you complain about that, we're going to arrest you.
And a member of the World Health Organization, which we'll be talking about, suggested such a thing.
Right. And so, but you see, he was acting kind of, in an official capacity. The talking heads who are describing, what's going to happen to the people if they don't obey, they're all just one big lump of government malevolence. And so for the public, you just have to, basically just say, look, we're not permitting any of this. Mm-hmm. We're not permitting it. And so this was really a good week. It's better than I hoped. We talked last week about how rough this last week might be, but it ends very well. Because there are protests going on, they're becoming larger and more aggressive.
And a wider acknowledgement, a larger section of the public sees this operation for what it is. And I'm seeing a lot kind of a popular idea that the numbers are being fudged. I saw a joke headline that man shot 33 times in the head dies of COVID-19.
Right, I know.
Yeah. Interesting number, but anyway, so there's a wider acceptance or appreciation or acknowledgement that we're being lied to about something very big here. It's a big and that's very important because this whole thing needs to be discredited. And I like to see as a result, not just them, some governor announcing lockdowns over and saying you're welcome. Is we need some people hounded from office, and their lives ruined over this. I like to see for pulling this. There needs to be personal consequences for these things.
Well, that's how we take the right back.
Yeah.
If we don't do that, we don't really get it back because they'll just, they'll end this part of the operation and then it'll just start up again in 3 or 4 months. So
yes.
We have to take these rights back. And basically, the fact is that the lockdown requirements are unconstitutional.
Yes.
They simply are unconstitutional. And so what was great about the São Paulo rebellion today, and I'll call it that, is that everyone was just taking their masks and throwing them away.
Yes.
And the public was basically, and the social distancing was gone too. They were just, and so this is one of the ways that we take it back is by throwing their masks away and simply by being in one another's presence.
Form a large group, throw the mask in a big pile and set them on fire.
Exactly. Yeah. This would be a great thing to do. Now, I wanted to point, some of the numbers are getting almost ridiculous. I mean, today, San Francisco reported they'd had 1,058 cases. They've had 20 deaths, 20. Now, bear in mind that the 1,000 number is just a fraction of how many have actually got it in San Francisco, mm-hmm. because these are just the ones who've come in, who were worried about it. 100% of the asymptomatic population hasn't shown up, and probably a lot of the people who don't feel well because they don't want to get near a hospital. Now, I just wanted to point out that, like in San Luis Obispo County, it's directly adjacent to ours. They've had like 120 people come down with it. And there've been one fatality, which of course was a comorbidity. It was a very elderly person. And they only have two people in the hospital, right? So this is basically the flu. But the argument was made that, well, San Luis Obispo is just this virile, youthful county, right? The people have great health. It's a wealthy county. No problem. Well, San Francisco sort of puts the lie to this because the only people that are left are the homeless. And it's, the city has been basically vacated. Very few of the population, it's a small fraction that's actually residing there now.
Did they finally close the bathhouses?
This is how you get, that's how you close them. But my point is that the, you know, whatever the number is, say it's somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 that have it. This isn't like a fraction of the virile, youthful humanity. I mean, this is San Francisco street people, and they've only had 20 deaths. I mean, think about like the fatalities in the so-called AIDS epidemic, mm-hmm. right? Remember that? I mean, San Francisco would have like, I forget, I wish I had the number, but I know it was in the thousands of dollars. No lockdown, mind you, never locked down the bathhouse. But here we've locked down an entire city. They're 50 days into this pandemic and you only have 20 deaths. So this just, you know, supports the idea that the numbers are really absurd. Now, incidentally,
they should just do what New York City did, go back and just count presumed cases so they can get.
Well, they can do that. Yeah. But you see, this is why, you know, when you first try to deceive, you wave a very tangled web, because they, in order for them to keep these kinds of horror poor numbers going, like in New York, you have to fake every data. You see, you can't have something like San Francisco or Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo, the places all around us, come in with completely different numbers, because the virus shouldn't be having different performances in different regions, right? Right. It shouldn't be less than, you know, 0.01% in San Francisco and an actual like 5%, I mean, which is 50, 60 times more in New York. You see what I mean? It's just, it does beg the question as to, well, what's the real number? And so I think the public is getting it. I think they are realizing that it's fake, the numbers are fake, and that the pandemic is fake, and that the lethality was greatly exaggerated.
But then they have to ask themselves why it was.
And now they have to ask why. And what I was going to say is that this has been a great period for the alt media. The alt media was really the media here, right? I mean, the mainstream was just a propaganda device.
Oh, it's gone.
It always is. But I think here the public could see it. They were getting information from alt media. A lot of people sort of started to tune in to alt media. It's a disorganized, chaotic clump. But nevertheless, people got the sense that they could get better information here than they could in mainstream media. And so it was a really good week for our period for the mainstream media. And what I'm hoping is that the same thing can happen now that occurred after 9/11, and even a lot faster. And that is that there is documentation that Mark Devlin, indefatigable, like critic of the music industry, mm-hmm. was asking like, well, where is there a compendium that I can use with normies, like to walk them through this, to show them, you know, how the operation occurred? Well, it doesn't exist yet, but it should. And what we need to do is, like occurred with 9/11, is record all of the lies that were coming from government and mainstream media and try to organize them simply into a book or some way that we can then use that, this document, to basically continue the eroding of the credibility of mainstream media and putting the citizen journalist, where he belongs in front of an audience.
Yeah, the good point is just point out Anthony Fauci, where he writes in the New England Journal of Medicine that the coronavirus won't be that much worse than the typical flu with a 0.01% fatality rate, but then he says on Meet the Press that it could be more than 1%. So,
yeah.
So which is it? So obviously he knows what he says on Meet the Press is going to get more traction in the public than some obscure journal. I know New Journal of Medicine obscure from the profession standpoint. It is obscure from the standpoint of the public. So someone needs to ask him, why the contradiction? Why would you do this? This is intention. You're intentionally misleading the public when you're doing that. And there has to be accountability for that. I don't know if there'll be enough political pressure for Congress to have hearings on that, but he should be subpoenaed and at least questioned about that contradiction. Some things like that, or the fact that, you know, Deborah Burks admits that the death certificates are intentionally being fudged. Her word was liberal or generous, which is ridiculous from the standpoint of death certificates. Death certificates have to be as precise as possible, but for this reason, they're vague, and what they're saying is, well, okay, he may have coronavirus, so therefore, we'll say it COVID-19. And funny enough, they also say they have coronavirus. Well, which one?
Yeah.
it's getting a little, we're told we're supposed to rely on the experts, and with expertise, you expect precision and reason in these things. But you don't get precision because you get these projections, the Imperial College out of Great Britain producing, you know, Neil Ferguson producing the study that projected 2 million dead in the United States, 500,000 dead in the UK. He didn't share his, how he got his data or how he did his numbers, but then he drops it down to 20,000 and then the 5,700 in the UK. It all of a sudden changes. It says, but this is supposed to be the science we're relying on? I mean, that's not science.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the projections are easily turned into propaganda.
Projections were used, that doomsday prediction was used to justify the initial lockdowns in the UK and United States and throughout Western Europe. From what I can
see. Yeah, it was the justification.
Yes.
I mean, it literally was the justification. The Imperial College study, which was criticized immediately by other scientists and then was revised like three times. Each time in an order of magnitude. So the thing was preposterous, but that's a good thing to document.
Oh, then it turns out that the Imperial College is a recipient of funding from Gavi, the Bill Gates' outfit, the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization. So
for sure,
in every instance, you have these colleges or institutions that tie back financially to Bill Gates or the pharmaceutical industry. So he creates this outfit, helps produce the hysteria in the lockdown, which then gives Bill Gates a platform to come out of his secret base under a volcano somewhere. I don't know where he is, but he emerges and does all these multiple appearances on CNN with these softball interviews, and with his ideas how the world should be reorganized, based on his vision of the future, and so, you know, that needs to be investigated, and she also should investigate his investment moves in the fall.
Well, he is just a lump of evil,
yeah.
and hopefully there will be some kind of investigation, but I doubt it's going to come through government. I think it has to be through the alt media. I don't know if you saw Gates's tweet that was like midweek. It was one of really the great moments in the alt media. He put out a tweet which had a comment section. This was a big
mistake. Oh, boy. That's a mistake.
There's a YouTube that captures it, and the guy who recorded it said there were 20,000 responses, and it was basically 100%. It wasn't just that they were opposed to Gates. Gates had put out a little, pablum tweet about it's just great. Our healthcare workers are just working so hard. Everything is just there. You know, we just owe so much to them. And the responses were like, you are a satanic,
yes,
evil being that we will fight in every way we can. You will never get my children. I mean, it was the anger and really the just, the fury, that was in these responses was incredible. And it was overwhelming. And it was from all over the world. And I actually wonder if that had an effect on the oligarchs, because I think this may be one of the ways that they judge sentiment is, by recordings of this kind of emotion. And it was just unambiguous. The guy who actually produced this little video said, Gates is getting slaughtered. He's just been slaughtered. And he would read a couple of them, but he said it was just big in every single case. But you see, the point is that, even though it's a very small sample size, say 20,000 is, I think, what the number of before they turned the thing off. But it was that it came so fast and that it reflects deep, widespread feeling.
Yeah.
And so when Gates, when he starts talking about chipping people and about mm-hmm. making vaccinations and about papers you're going to need to travel around the world. That gets out. That gets out.
You immunization certificates.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you just completely.
Well, I mean, this type of technocratic control has been on, you know, it's been a plan for decades, and sure, the technology allows for it now. So now they're trying to create a pretext or justification for it. They didn't get it with the environmental scare, but they got it with the pandemic scares, and now they're trying to impose it. And so the reality is that they've been wanting to do this because that's how they view humanity, as cattle. You know, they wanted to view this, impose this for the longest time, and then this crisis creates the pretext for it. This is the cunning of reason, as Hegel would say, or just the, you know, the will of God here playing out, turning evil into good. Where, and now this is a positive spin on it, is that they've reached too far. This is a bridge too far for them right now. They've exposed themselves for the fiends that they are. So you have a wide sort of a public consciousness of Bill Gates being a fiend or a villain, which is very good. So yeah, now he won't be able to emerge and come out in public without getting pies thrown in his face, which is the situation that we want.
Right. You know? In fact, it's actually ideal. See, this is things turning in the direction of the favor of the alt media, because Gates was brought out at this time because the image of him was someone who has this, you know, positive persona in the minds of the public because of his technical background. We yes. talked about him last week, you know, how he's a lifetime actor, he's artificially created, but nevertheless, they have this basically oligarch puppet who is supposed to have a smiley face, and the public will be more likely to mm-hmm. accept the vaccination program because Gates is selling it to them. Well, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Gates was exposed, and Gates became basically a negative. In other words, he was somehow, and I'm not sure exactly the process over the last like 3 weeks, but somehow the public turned on him. They identified him, and not just in the alt media, but in a large scale. I mean, I was at before we went on the air. I was having a conversation with someone. These are just very kind of non-conspiratorial theory types, and they were playing up very strongly against Gates and the vaccinations and the papers. They had heard about this. I didn't bring the information to them. I was just listening. I was fascinated by how far they had come. So Gates is now a negative. Mm-hmm. Gates is a positive for the alt media, and I think he's going to disappear. I think you'll see very quickly, just he'll be taken off. They'll have to replace him with someone else.
But I'd like to see the other side of this is a political pressure to investigate the role of the Gates Foundation, Gavi, Imperial College, in sort of stoking this, fomenting this crisis to justify this lockdown. And again, the lockdown was there as cover for something else, a financial coup, perhaps a political coup, which is still, I think, in the planning stage, or at least being gradually implemented. So that's why it's so important that not just to kind of laugh this off as another overreach or government bungling or something. No, this is part of a sinister plan which needs to be thoroughly discredited. And you're going to have, you know, you're going to have the political establishment upended, or at least, you know, seriously, you know, damaged by this, because they're the ones that implemented it. They're the middle managers did this. Because you still have this rhetoric. Okay, we're going to open up, and now here's our plan for opening up. These are the conditions. You have to do this. You have to do that. You have to have immunization. We need shots. We need vaccinations. That has to be thoroughly discredited, because first of all, the whole narrative of the pandemic, is that, you know, we have to create the narrative that it really never existed. It was a creation. It was theater. I'm not saying that there aren't viruses out there. I have a serious doubts about this particular thing even existing. That's okay. We can debate about that. It's really irrelevant, because even if it does exist, it wasn't anything more than, you know, a flu or cold like thing, which didn't warrant anything, any extraordinary measures at all. It was a cover. So the whole thing to create a panic to justify a multi-trillion dollar transfer of wealth and a suspension of the Bill of Rights, the destruction of people's livelihood, the dropping the value of assets because, you know, someone's going to come and buy these assets up for cheap six months a year from now when the economy doesn't recover. We got to remember who to blame for this. So there's got to be accountability for this. Don't let, you know, the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gateses and the George Soroses come in and capitalize on the destruction that they wrought, which they're still in a position to do despite being publicly unpopular. There has to be accountability for this.
Well, the problem is, of course, is that the public has no money and is going to be even more broke and in debt and starving as we go forward. And this is, you know, there is like a troubling way of looking at the events of the last week, which is that they have basically achieved one of the primary goals, which is to wreck the economy.
Yes.
And they can now end the lockdown because, and then, you know, wash their hands of, you know, going forward saying, well, you know, we've done everything the public wanted us to do. We locked down to prevent, you know, the pandemic. We were his heroes. Then unfortunately the economy has disappeared.
Yeah.
But don't worry, we're going to spend lots of money to restart it. Well, you know, I think that within a month after the end of the lockdown, or because the lockdown will be ending in phases, so it's kind of hard to know exactly when that'll be. But when they recreate businesses, I was looking at Trump's plan. I think it was Trump's plan. It could have been one of the state's plans because there's different plans, you know, circulating. But I think it was Trump's plan where, or the federal government's suggestions that they would first, you know, you wouldn't have bars. You know, you'd have there are different categories of businesses that would open. And then in the next phase, you would have bars, but there would still be an attempt to social distance. I'm serious. I'm literally, this is just insane. But this was what they had.
Keep 6 feet for the Holy Ghost? No.
You know, I mean, you just kind of scratch your head and go, like, this, they can't be serious. But anyway, but the point is that.
Well, I guess you can still have, like, strip bars because they got, you know, they're up on the stage.
Sure. Yeah, that would probably work. But it's just that you are going to have a lot of people and a lot of circulating of money that isn't, you know, in the same form that it was like 2 months ago.
Yes.
And so that this is a kind of poverty. It's what we call when you have no money. And
well, that type of like gradual opening up lends too much legitimacy to the pandemic narrative.
Exactly. And that's why
that needs to be discredited.
It does need to be discredited. And so we need to have a, you know, a dramatic kind of shift of opening up, which I think they'll resist. But you can see what I'm concerned about is
yes.
that they have achieved their goal of wrecking the economy, and now they will give legitimacy to the pandemic by this controlled reintroduction of the economy.
Here's an example of this, them taking the victory lap after they wreak their destruction and saying, you're welcome, as everyone's impoverished. And that's the attitude that they have. It's really galling. But you have Anthony Fauci, he's talking about the, I heard him in an interview talking about, you know, his initial projections from 2 million to 200,000 to, you know, to 40,000, whatever. And he says, well, these are just projections. And of course, we were told to listen to scientists and experts because this is science and everything. So he's admitting that basically these policies weren't based on science at all. And then they say, well, you know, the numbers are low because of the measures we implemented. Okay, scientists, okay, expert, how do you prove that?
Right. Obviously they couldn't. And obviously there's no science in back of any, whatever one wants to mean by the term science.
So these are political decisions, not scientific decisions.
Exactly. Yeah. These are political decisions. And so what needs to happen in the compendium, as I'm calling it, this compendium of all of the crimes that have gone into the lockdown, is that, you know, the debunking of the use of the models, and how the that has to be in there so that people can see, you know, how they were fooled. And then you have to like step through like Fauci's statements because he changes them. You know, in other words, one of the problems, Tim, is that the public has a very short memory and they can then basically, you know, come up with new versions of reality. And they just expect very few people remember what they said. So in the compendium, we really should try to document Fauci's claims. The head of the World Health Organization, Teddy Unpronounceable. I mean, I who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So he made a lot of statements about what they were dealing with and the kinds of destruction was going to occur. So you had a whole systematic clump of leaders engaged in what can be called fear porn.
Mm-hmm.
None of them had any real science in back of the statements. Someone needs to go and record all of these, put them in a couple pages, and then put that as like a chapter in the compendium of the malevolence, so that we end up with like a, basically what eventually happened with 9-1-1 is just a lot of documentation of the system of malevolence that was used.
Well, build a conspiracy case to suspend the Bill of Rights, violate everyone's civil liberties, and ruin the economy. And I'd like to have a situation where people like Fauci or even Gates worry about traveling to a particular country or a particular state because they'll be arrested. And you could do that, same thing they did with Kissinger.
Gates is actually, as I understand, he's actually under trial or his
in India.
In India.
Yeah, it's a civil thing, though, I think.
Yeah, well, but it is a trial.
Yes.
And if it succeeds there, I think there is actually a criminal venue that could be engaged.
For paralyzing 500,000 children? Come on.
Something like that. And with foreknowledge that this was going to happen. I mean, basically, it was one of Gates's experiments. And this is critical to get that stuff into the compendium because we don't want to just remove Gates from the public scene. I mean, he's irritating and he's basically a psychopath, but so what? Removing him isn't going to really do much. What we need to do is to show that that this guy who is the largest funder of World Health Organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
has basically taken over all of these different supposedly public health facilities, engaged in this activity.
It also exposes the problem of oligarchy. None of these oligarchs are public officials, even held any, they're not elected anything. There's no accountability, and they're in a position to guide governmental policy through their institutions, NGOs, foundations, and supposed independent colleges,
I mean, you had Fauci.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't elected. You had Gates, and you had Teddy Unpronounceable. They were the ones who were actually making public statements about the reasons for the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trump did very little analysis in public about the lockdown and certainly didn't do anything in terms of legal justification of it.
No.
So, but instead you've got Gates, he was all over like a period of about 2 weeks. He must have been on mainstream media just an hour every single night.
Mm-hmm.
They just had him on show after show after show, playing up that this crisis is just moving us closer to world vaccination.
And they're all talking about he's the vaccine guru, but none of these interviews ever questioned him about what's going on in India with the lawsuit that he's facing.
Well, are any, I mean, my God, there was like, when we talked about it last week, there was like a half a dozen of these catastrophic results from his vaccine experiments.
Yeah, in Africa.
And after that, he then was somehow able to be on the media promoting mandatory vaccinations as a solution to an epidemic that wasn't even real. And I just wanted to throw one thing in so people can really see just how heinous a situation we're dealing with. The modern vaccines, when Gates was, I was listening to him talk, and so I did some research into actually what is the technology that it's referring to. And fortunately, John Rappaport had actually done a great column. And incidentally, hats off to Rappaport doing this whole thing. I think he's done a great job of exposing, actually what's going on. And it turns out, I mean, my God, of all of the reporters who were talking about what was going to occur like 45 days ago,
mm-hmm.
who actually comes out with the clearest vision? It's got to be Rappaport. I mean, you can argue one way or another about some of his claims, but in terms of the bulk of accuracy, I mean, my God, there's just no question. He was the premier reporter in the United States during that period. But I wanted to mention that the vaccines that Gates is talking about, this modern generation, now these are basically chemical formulas which are designed to change the RNA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you understand what we're talking about here? I mean, we're actually talking about putting in chemicals into you. This isn't just the normal vaccination concept where you throw some mercury in and then if you're lucky, you get a bunch of autistic kids, right? This is the oligarch's famous, you know, formula. I mean, you're talking about redesigning human beings. And Rappaport, in one of his columns, he talks about some of the experiments that they've done with these things, which have had, as you can easily imagine, just catastrophic disaster occur in the testing of them. So this is what Gates was actually promoting, is this modern generation of vaccinations, which are RNA transfer elements, which, I mean, you're into just a world of evil here that's just incredible. The idea that Gates could even bring these ideas into the public with a straight face just shows you that his, you know, I mean, he's obviously working for an organization whose moral structure is not made public, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so this is why the compendium, I call this, which I think it took several years to actually get into existence with 911. And remember, there was some key moments, like the one guy, you know, came up with thermite. He said this is like a possibility. But they had a bunch of guys who were looking at just the nature of the collapse, you know. And so after a couple of years, you started to get lots of this stuff organized. And that's actually how I became, you know, sort of interested in alt media. It's just what they had achieved. Well, I'm hoping that the same thing happens here, except a lot faster, because we have a great opportunity, because we're really riding some momentum now. The alt media can come out of this, particularly when the reality of the pandemic collapses and the reality of the depression sets in. I think at that point we'll have a chance to really, you know, establish ourselves as the replacement. You know, warts and all, obviously we have just every imaginable kinds of problems. But there are a lot of people in the alt media that are really trying to get good information, communicate information, and they're honest. So we have a huge advantage over mainstream media, and this is a great time to try to, to even go further with, development of, our popularity.
Yep. There's an interesting, before we go on our main topic of the night, the a humorous story that I heard. I think it's confirmed that Chris, a.k.a. Fredo Cuomo, was caught violating quarantine. He claims he has a coronavirus. Violating quarantine, he went to go to Hamptons to check out his beach house that's being constructed. And he was reported to the local police for that. So that's the brother of the mayor, the governor of New York, violated quarantine, went to look at his beach house in the Hamptons. Supposedly, he's ill with the COVID-19, so.
Right. I'll tell you what, hats off. I'm glad he did it. And, I just think that more relatives of Cuomo should, just throw off their masks and just come into the street and, and protest, because this is what it's going to take. So we were going to talk about the World Health Organization, which is entwined in all of this completely. So what about World Health Organization, Tim? What the hell is it?
Well, I guess I'll start with all things Wikipedia.
Yep.
The World Health Organization is a specialized agency of the United Nations responsible for international public health. It is part of the UN Sustainable Development Group. That's interesting. The WHO Constitution, which establishes the agency's governing structure and principles, states its main objective is ensuring the attainment of all peoples of the highest possible level of health. It is headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, with 6 semi-autonomous regional offices and 150 field offices worldwide. The WHO was established on 7 April 1948, which is commemorated as World Health Day. The first meeting of the World Health Assembly, the agency's governing body, took place on 24 July 1948. The WHO incorporated the assets, personnel, and duties of the League of Nations Health Organization. It began working in earnest in 1951 following a significant infusion of financial and technical resources. The WHO's broad mandate includes advocating for universal health care. That's interesting. Monitoring public health risks, coordinating responses to health emergencies, and promoting human health and well-being. It provides technical assistance to countries, sets international health standards and guidelines, and collects data on global health issues through the World Health Survey. Its flagship publication, the World Health Report, provides expert assessments of global health topics and health statistics on all nations. WHO also serves as a forum for summits and discussions on health issues. WHO relies on assessed and voluntary contributions from member states, private donors for funding. As of 2018, it has a budget of over $4.2 billion, most of which comes from voluntary contributions from member states. It elects and advises its executive board of 24 health specialists. The WHA convenes, this is the world, I guess, WHA convenes annually and is responsible for selecting the director general, setting goals and priorities, and approving the WHO's budget and activities. Current director general is Tedros Adhanom, former health minister and foreign minister of Ethiopia, who began his five-year term on July 1st, 2017. So that's the brief history and breakdown or, you know, description of the World Health Organization. Of course, as we allude to in our discussion tonight, it has lots of conflicts of interest and problems and scandals that we can touch on, that we should not look at the World Health Organization as a responsible authority or an honest authority on these matters. Obviously, it can be, as we can see, it can be taken over or sort of hijacked by special interest or, you know, elitist interest, which it clearly has. So that's the World Health Organization. This guy Tedros Adhanom is an interesting character. You know, but that's the World Health Organization. So they're just out there trying to improve health and make sure everyone, you know, has a full, fulfilling, productive life. So what problem do you have with the World Health Organization?
Well, you know, I mean, other than its, you know, worship of Satan, I guess I don't have much. Well, the problem with it is that it's been taken over. Whatever it was at the beginning, who knows? The Wikipedia description of its funding is inaccurate. And here's the truth, and this just explains the whole problem. It's only 25% of its current budget actually gets from its member states. The remaining 75% comes from voluntary contributions, individuals. And guess who is the biggest contributor? Bill Gates. And his donations exceed those of any individual member state.
I think now with U.S. pulling out, he's the biggest contributor as of now.
This is the current situation. Yeah. His donations exceed, and this was written before the U.S. pulled out, incidentally. The U.S. is only a fraction of the 25%. I think it's the largest fraction, but it's 75% of its budget comes from what's called voluntary contributions, and Gates's foundation is by far the biggest funder, and its donation, Bill Gates' foundation, exceeds, but this is before the U.S. pulled out, any individual member state. So you can see the problem is that it's basically, at this point, it's a advertising device for pharmaceutical companies.
Much like the CDC, then.
Exactly right. Yeah. It is an advertising device. It had a reputation. And I don't even think it ever deserved it, because if you go through what it has done historically, it's either done nothing or malevolence. I mean, there, you can argue this, but that's my opinion of when I looked at its track record. But, you know, over the last 15 years, it just completely collapsed. And now it's been taken over by Gates. And then, of course, if you go through the, you know, the voluntary contributions, it's you know, you can actually see there are, you know, many individuals are related into the pharmaceutical industry. So it's really just, it is a advertising device for the pharmaceutical industry that is confusing to the public who thinks they're dealing with some kind of objective United Nation, commercial entity. So this is the biggest problem. In the swine flu pandemic, the last pandemic, you recall, it was 09, I believe. Yeah, it was 2009. Again, the WHO came out, declared it a pandemic. And then, after the fact, because it never really, the fear porn never really came into reality, the investigations then started to realize that the whole pandemic plan was the product of the drug industry. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in other words, they basically collapsed and were advocating products from contributors. So you had, Tamiflu, Oseltamivir, this stuff was being advocated for a pandemic that was far less severe than WHO was claiming. And then you had direct financial relationships between WHO and the drug companies. So it was just, in my opinion, there should have been a complete severing of any kind of ties with WHO at that point by the U.S. government, because it was obviously compromised. But then going on, you have to remember that WHO then, remember I talked about it being just an advertising entity, WHO then became the most important, I would call, say, parrot of Purdue's Pharma's opioid marketing. I mean, it's just incredible when you go through this that you can see that WHO was actually making statements that, there really isn't much problem with opioid dependence because of OxyContin, that it only occurs in less than 1% of the patients. And then my favorite is, and this is, I mean, when I read this, I just about fell on the floor. In 2012, WHO decided to come out with a proclamation giving opioid guidance for children with cancer pain. And of course, this would then be used as a template for all use of opioid given to children. WHO stated that there is no maximum dosage of strong opioids like OxyContin for children. There is maximum dosage. Just give them all you damn want. So
they're doing the bidding of the Sackler family.
Yeah, exactly. Through the and through the Sacklers' ownership of Purdue. So anyway, how can you now look at WHO in light of this, and then even explain as to why it even has a reputation that's works in terms of advertising with the public? And it's just because it has enough power to own media and politicians who continue to give lip service to an obviously compromised and corrupt organization. So the public stays basically under some kind of control in terms of their, understanding of WHO. But I think it would be great is if this particular crisis was the straw that broke the camel's back, and that WHO was basically exposed as being literally corrupt, and that this then, fell over into the CDC, because there is a revolving door between these organizations in terms of both management and also funding and advocation of different kinds of drugs.
Yeah, so, basically they inevitably end up, if you're an official, a relatively high official with the World Health Organization, you leave to go work for some big pharmaceutical firm, vice president or president, some sinecure or something. Same thing at the CDC with Julie Gerberding was her name.
Yeah.
She went to go for Merck after putting her time in at the CDC and sort of pimping for vaccines. And so you have that situation where, they can. And it's also a similar thing with the CDC's Epidemiological Intelligence Service, where they're charged with investigating finding viruses, and they always do. Surprise, surprise. But, these are the people that go out and they will be, they'll staff, state level health officials, and they'll go to the medical schools. And this is sort of how the octopus extends itself throughout the system defend its interests, you know, in its corporate interests, to make sure that the system is indeed sort of a cartel, monopolized, and no dissenting opinion is tolerated, or at least gets a fair hearing in the public, because this is the official, you know, take on thing, narrative of things.
Yeah, and you can see their control over the organization. By they, I mean the oligarch control over who, is highlighted by the current director. And, you know, Tedros Adhanom.
He's a war criminal, isn't he, or something? Is there...
Well, yeah, but I'm going to give his last name a shot here. It's Ghebreyesus.
Yeah.
If you're Ethiopian, you're probably going to send me hate mail, but that's my best chance. That's my best chance of thing. Anyway, I'm going to call him Teddy.
Well, he was installed by Gates, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, the thing is that it's very mysterious. No one really knows who installed him. However, he was working for Gates, had a financial relationship before he became who's director. Now, the important thing is that he is under suspicion of having committed crimes against humanity.
Yeah, something like
that. Right.
He covered up an epidemic in Ethiopia or something.
Right, that's right, because basically it was against... the epidemic occurred in a fraction of the Ethiopians that are have a struggle with the group of Ethiopians that Teddy comes from, mm-hmm. and so that the group that suffered the this epidemic,
it was a cholera outbreak or something.
It was a cholera outbreak, mm-hmm. indeed, and so they brought charges against him, and they have an extremely good case. In fact, it's I went through it and I just said, gee, this is, you know, pretty much airtight. He definitely did commit this this war crime, this crime against humanity. But you see, no doubt this moved him to the top of the list of candidates in terms of like who is going to become the director of who. You can see why. I mean,
I like Bill Gates saying, I like your style.
I like you, right, exactly. I mean, he's a genocidist. So yeah. That's obviously, you know, you've got to have that on your resume. But moreover, he's completely corrupt. I mean, someone with this background, if you go through the charges that have been made against him, if any, even a tenth of the stuff is real.
Are you calling the question integrity of Ethiopia's Marxist-Leninist government?
You know, I don't know what else I can do but to call it into question. But the fact is that I'm sure that this is how they found him. That this was, I mean, he had been working with Gates, but I mean, Gates has who knows how many people are on his payroll. But the fact that he had been engaged in genocide, it just kind of, you see my point? It just sort of brought a smile, a sad one, to my face when I read this, because I could see why they would want him. Because this is someone who's so corrupt that, you know, with a little money and a little, you know, kind of nudge in the right way, he would obviously do whatever they told him to do. And so when it came to the handling of this epidemic, you have to remember he is the guy. He was the one who first really brought the pandemic situation to the world. It was who was the one that actually made the declaration, mm-hmm. that it was going to be a world pandemic, right? And this, it was Teddy Unpronounceable,
which right? sets the stage for Bill Gates to come on. And,
exactly, yeah. Right. See what I'm saying is that this is conspiracy. This is conspiracy.
That, so this is the criminal case that needs to be made.
It is a criminal case that this bagman genocidist was talked somehow. My working theory is that they got him, they put him in this position, and then when the situation in Wuhan occurred, they said, okay, there it is. This is our world pandemic. We need you to make it scary to everyone. Bill will come on and he'll start getting everyone ready for the vaccine we're going to sell.
Yeah, they declared a virus was the cause of this, and even John Rappaport is dubious about that, because it's weird enough is they during that Event 201, a participant was the Chinese head of the Chinese CDC, although the event has it being starting in Brazil, I think, at a pig farm or something. But so The thing is, you have a, you know, like John Rapoport's, it makes the case is in a situation in China where you have millions and millions of people with pneumonia and hundreds of thousands of death per year. Well, yeah, you have, you know, respiratory disorders that you can ascribe to a virus and declare it. And then this becomes a pretext for a clampdown in China. And then word gets out that this is effective. And Tedros praises that. At the same time, he says, well, we shouldn't keep Chinese from traveling and that shouldn't do this. So he's encouraging travel and these things to set the stage for this pandemic narrative. Again, I'm saying all this can be done without the real existence of a novel virus, because you create the theater of it. And at any given time, you're going to have people throughout the world with respiratory distress and illnesses because of toxic poisoning, bad air. That isn't to say there might be something too, but it is nothing real. It's not a unique threat to humanity the way it was presented. The point being is you could set the stage for this, and he played a key part in his communications with the Chinese government, his public utterances about the thing, at the same time sort of coming across as being flat-footed or slow-footed in responding to this, which is now the basis for the Trump administration's criticism of WHO and defunding of it, which, although he's defunding WHO, which is a good thing, it does support the narrative of the pandemic still, which is a problem.
Exactly, and that seems fake to me. And I will go out on a limb, because this is way over my pay grade, but who cares at this point? I'm in lockdown. I actually have come to basically accept Rappaport's position that there isn't a virus.
Yeah, prove it to me.
That this was basically a pneumonia outbreak, which then was defined as such. And then the coronavirus is basically something that is you can find, but it is not causal to these.
Yeah, you can always find, it's always there. Yeah.
It's always there enough so that you can get test positive.
And their open admission of cooking the books with these death certificates.
Right, exactly.
Italy, all throughout Italy and the United States, even Deborah Brooks, to me is a strong sign this is what happened. Yeah.
Exactly. So I know this is a bizarre thing. This is like almost hard to get.
Well, it's multi-layered. You also have, like, you know, the BioLab story.
Yeah.
Interesting nuggets there. I mean, yeah. It could happen. I tend to agree with John Rappaport, whereas bioweapons aren't really reliable because you can't control them. Viruses are unstable, you know. So, you know, they may tinker with them, but they can't really control them. So there's a lot of sci-fi presumption with this, that you can actually weaponize a virus and control its direction. And you really can't do that. But it's an interesting narrative, because it can
it's a lot easier to control the media and political people than it is to control a virus.
So
I think that's what happened, and then I think what you have is mass hysteria, you know, that is promoted, you know, by the fear porn narrative.
Joe, the American people are far too clever for that. Come on.
Well, you know, after they were before they watched like 5,000 hours of Walking Dead and zombie apocalypse,
yes.
But now they're terrified and they're just very easy to scare. And so I do think that this is probably what we're dealing with. And I think that's why when you look at like the San Francisco numbers and you think, well, gee, there's got to be 4,000 or 5,000, they only have 20. I mean, that's like almost like the common cold in San Francisco, where you have like homeless dying all the time, right? So how can it even possibly be that low? I mean, how is it even possible? Well, it's only possible is if it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And then what you're literally dealing with is just complete nonsense where they have, with the causality between the COVID and the death is non-existent.
And there's no excess, at least as of yet, they've yet to bring out any excess mortality numbers. So.
Right. So anyway, I think, but, you know, like I could be wrong about this, obviously, but.
Yeah.
I don't think that the virus in any case is something that could ever justify a lockdown. But
well,
there
is a history. There is in the World Health Organization, the CDC, in the swine flu epidemic, where the swine flu supposedly was attributed to this H1N1 that developed. It turns out that probably doesn't really exist. And the source of the swine flu was that, you know, that pig farm in Mexico, Longoria, Mexico, where they you know, 900,000 pigs, and they didn't have proper sanitary conditions. They had what they called a feces lagoon you could see from space, apparently. And so people were getting sick because the workers weren't being cared for. They were being exposed to this, not only the pig feces and urine and all the bacteria, but also the chemicals they were spraying it with. And this became the source of the swine flu.
Yeah.
And this is where we kind of get an idea. The function of the CDC, the World Health Organization, doctors like Fauci, is these are the technocrats that are brought in to provide scientific cover for corporate malfeasance and crimes. Because, you know, they can blame a virus.
They asked Fauci if the numbers are being cooked. And Fauci's response was, "Well, you know, you're into conspiracy theory here. You know, don't even."
But they admitted to it.
There was a guy in Congress. I forget who. I doesn't recall. But he was actually a congressperson, and he said, "You know, someone should ask Anthony about the additional funding that hospitals get if they declare a person to have COVID."
Because Dr. Jensen in Minnesota talked about it.
This is not conspiracy theory. I was on the committee. Somehow I knew all the details. He says, mm-hmm. you know, I know about this. They are getting more money. And he said, someone should mention to Anthony that when you cross-connect, you know, medicine with money like this, you can often have confusion in the data. and this isn't conspiracy theory, Anthony. But you see, my point was...
Well, what it is this is that Dr. Jensen, there was an interview, he's in Minnesota, and he was being interviewed by a local journalist. And it's kind of funny because the journalist, I think, was actually genuine. You may get that at the local level. And he's saying that the guidelines were encouraging people to, encouraging doctors to classify deaths as COVID-19 deaths, presume it, even though there's been no positive test for that, or the fact that there are many other conditions that would have led to the death far before any COVID, you know, the coronavirus would do. And he said, they're actually padding that? Why are they doing that? Why are they padding the numbers? And the journalist was incredulous, and the doctor says, and he kind of pauses. You can see in his face, fear is an excellent tool for governing people. It's how you control people. So there it is, fear. And then same doctor admitted that a hospital gets $13,000 extra for every declared COVID-19 patient, and that patient goes on a respirator for just a few minutes. They get $39,000. It's a block payment.
Yeah, that was actually those are the precise details that guy mentioned. I just wanted to say that I am going to predict that if you have like a dramatic, you know, the humanity takes back the streets and the lockdowns just end within like a week period. I mean, this is far-fetched, but if that happens, I am going to go out on the limb and say that there would be a 100% collapse of the fatalities of COVID. In other words, you wouldn't have a normal bell-shaped curve. You'd just have they would just stop.
Well, that's flattening the curve.
Yeah, they would flatten it to zero, and you would flatten it overnight. Because if there isn't any extra money and if there isn't any political pressure to create the fear porn, I just don't think you're going to see any. I mean, you see, this argument that we're making fits the reality so much better than the fear porn. Because bear in mind, the hospitals are empty. I mean, if you look at the citizen hero journalists that have gone out and collected 100 videos of all of the entry waiting rooms, you know, for all these hospitals that are all being in the media declared as, you know, overrun. And there's just no one there.
Well, think of the selective hedge funds that are able to go in and buy up those hospitals.
Yeah, well, of course, and they will as well. Yeah. And so you know, the horror is in front of us, and we've now been through the operation, which I think had the distraction of the virus, but the real treachery is in our economic system. They've created a situation now where they've gotten rid of, I don't know, I'm almost afraid to think of how many of the small businesses that employed, that were the primary employer of real Americans, right? Mm-hmm. How many of them are not going to be able to come back? You know, you could be looking at just numbers that are almost surrealistic.
Well, what's going to happen is they may come back, but 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, and they go out of business, and no one's going to make the connection.
Yeah, well, that's right. But
it's the downturn.
Downturn. But you see, during that period, the government will now step in. If I'm right, you're going to see, and I have, you know, I did way back when say they were going to, you know, when they had the repo event occur, I said, you know, this could be the beginning where you're going to see just trillions of dollars out of coming, you know, different ideas, different programs, but it'll be just in the enormous numbers because they're at the point where they're going to have to pull the plug on the system. And the way they do it is by just simply spending the dollar in out of existence.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they'll do it. And so now you've got this process where they set up the American public to want huge amounts of money. Very little of it will get, incidentally. The money that they're going to create out of thin air, most of it ends up back in their pockets. But, you know, that's another story. But the thing is that at a certain point, they can then say, well, the value of the dollar is gone. We're in a national crisis. And fortunately, we have this world currency situation worked out. We're going to switch over to that Monday morning.
Yeah, and you get your UBI, Universal Basic Income check. If you submit to the jabs and immunization clearances and these things, and this is why it's so important at this point, as the narrative crumbles, that it crumbles in our direction because they're going to try to control it. And the whole thing needs to be discredited because the whole thing is a pretext not only for the heist that we've witnessed and we will witness, the future heist that we'll witness, but also this justification and pretext for a technocratic slave state, which Bill Gates seems to be so enamored with.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Tim. Well said. I mean, the thing is, we need a really powerful response that basically just makes it impossible for the government even to bring out the suggestion of mandatory vaccinations. And of course, we need a dramatic, you know, shift in our politicians. We have to respond in the right way. It isn't enough to just be angry. We have to also be smart. And by smart, we have to get real political representatives. We don't have enough right now, if any. There's a few that have stepped up, but I mean, like there were sheriffs, for example, that came out in Michigan. They said, hey, we're elected representatives. We're going to defend the Constitution. The hell with the governor. They didn't say
I just one sheriff saying, and he was just being apolitical. I liked it because he just said, I just want people getting out, getting exercise. I still want people to be careful. He's being practical about it, you know. But he says, I want people outside exercising and not staying home getting drunk and having domestic problems. And this is an interesting point because this is how bad what their proposals are from a public health standpoint. Is the governor of Michigan doesn't want people going out and getting exercise, working, engaged in productive employment, but they can go into liquor stores and buy liquor. Now, getting drunk suppresses your immune system. So if there's something out there anyway, which is better, go out, get some sun, get some activity, get on the boat, go fishing, or stay home, use whatever little money I've left to buy some alcohol to numb your pain, your emotional pain.
They also have the med centers open where you can get your OxyContin prescription.
Yeah, which isn't good for your immune system, I gather.
Yeah. So
was pushing for so long?
It is a death machine, and you have to be very careful as you maneuver through it. We need to change out our political representatives or get a critical mass of them elected who are basically aware of all of these things. You know, they have to have the awareness.
Broad awareness of the CDC and also the World Health Organization.
And of government malevolence. They can't be afraid to talk about 911. I mean, so we need that kind of people in there. And then we need to have an absolute rock hard resistance against any chemicals from Gates and these kinds of people entering into our body or our children's body. I mean, you know, you just have to look at what they could do to us with that kind of vaccination to really, to really resist. And I would just say that if someone is curious about, how to respond, go to YouTube and find the response to Bill Gates' tweet, and you'll listen to this is the right response. I mean, this is real humanity. It's anger, it's articulate, and it's strong-willed. They're going to fight because, you know, we could get a situation in a few months where Gates is able to maneuver, you know, the and Gates at all, the whole oligarch class may say, well, now's the time we're going to start with a mandatory vaccination program. We really have to have the kind of passion that we saw on the streets of San Paulo this morning everywhere in the United States. There just has to be, you know, basically the same people who were on the steps of the Michigan State House with their ARs. I mean, we need millions of those people to stand up. It just has to be something that is impossible for the government to even consider. Mm-hmm. That's something that the citizens can do.
It'll be a nice thing if, like, rank and file police and the sheriffs, these just simply not enforcing these orders.
Yeah, and you know the thing is that this isn't an advocation of violence. It's just the opposite. It's just the citizen has to be fierce and has to simply say no. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen, and basically say no and defend one another against any force that could be trying to be used. You don't need to wage a war. You just need to say no and defend one another and say you're not going to get into our community. And I think you'll find that if the citizens are active enough and animated enough, and particularly if we have a few political individuals who'll step forward and advocate for us, a lot of the sheriffs will then say, nope, we're not getting, not in my county.
Yeah.
We're not going to demand that, that they drag children out and put them into the vax van and jab them with something that, is going to change their DNA.
Yeah. Hopefully that goes viral.
Yeah, well, let's hope, viral to use an expression. So that's the thing is that, the future is, it's treacherous. But this week was a good week because we saw the citizens stir.
But it's also important, again, politicians need to be blamed because they're the middle of a managers are responsible for carrying out these orders. When Governor Murphy of New Jersey said it's above my pay grade, maybe he was revealing something.
He was, of course. That was as clear as a bell.
He's taking orders from somebody. So then you have to ask you what's going on here. So basically, our government's not in control. So you have to make it so it is back in control. So and then we can control the government because right now oligarchs are controlling it through technocrats like Fauci, Tedros Adhanom, and organizations like WHO and CDC. This is where the again, we're told these are the scientists, the public health officials, the doctors, the experts, the technocrats, if you will. But technocrats are always frontmen for oligarchs, and they use the language of science and objectivity, these things, and sort of high tech to control anything. So it's objective. It's beyond political. But listen, like as John Rappaport says that the most dangerous cartel is the medical cartel because it flies the banner, it flies no political banner. It comes across as apolitical when it is not. You know, it is. In fact, you can say it's apolitical to the extent that they serve the interest of elite oligarchy, see themselves above the political fray. Maybe that's one way to look at it. But I'm saying is that this bunch of people, you know, the World Health Organization, CDC, claiming to protect humanity, all the same way they talk about when they talk about the environment. They always talk about, saving lives. It's all a lie. It's there to enslave you, harvest you, and put you in an early grave.
Yeah, you can see it this last month. I mean, think of how many Comanche, militia men it would take to get America to be as locked down as the medical cartel did.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, they would have need 20 million people in here to, create social distancing. But this group was able to do it just with a little pseudoscience and the representation of some fear porn.
Yeah.
So this is how dangerous they are. They can use medical technology and medical propaganda basically to frighten us so much that we will, we just become thought puppets, and then we're basically on the chopping block because then it's right into the vaccination van. So this is what we got to do is expose these guys and expose medicine as a technique, and it has been ever since the Rockefellers took the thing over to damage us, and it is not there to make us well. The immune system has billions of years, or however you want to characterize it, a natural approach to health. The chemicals really don't make any improvement.
No.
Work on your immune system, and I think you'll be a lot better off than like letting the oligarchs have access to your body with chemicals.
Well, the immune system is natural. It was put there, designed to deal with nature and these microbes that serve whatever function. There is some debate about that, what these do, you know, the whole viral thing and then what exactly a virus is and these things. That's a topic for another day, perhaps, but it's natural. And all things being equal, for the most part, people can cope with this if they're healthy. So the main focus of public health should be the promotion of healthy individuals to better immune systems, better diet, clean water, not pharmacology and, you know, petroleum-based drugs that are actually, by the very nature, toxic to the system. So,
yeah, well said. And where is that? I mean, here we are just, you know, the virus is there. We have to social distance. Our immune systems aren't strong enough to handle the virus. Mm-hmm. And don't worry, wonder drugs are on the way and wonder vaccines. Look, the only people who are dying are people who have compromised immune systems. I mean, the big takeaway from all this is, well, don't have a compromised immune system.
Which means eat right, get exercise, get a lot of sun, don't eat processed foods, maybe avoid GMO, these things. But this is everything the modernity pushes on us, doesn't it?
Exactly. So that's the, you know, that's the positive direction. And, you know, you can become more fierce and more intellectually powerful and then able to fight better because we're going to have to fight going forward.
So, okay, Joe.
Tim, pleasure talking to you, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, see what unfolds. Take it easy.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it'll be an interesting week.
Bye-bye.